It is Wednesday, April 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, international condemnation of the apparent chemical attack in Syria grows. North Korea tests another missile, and disc jockey Calvin Harris produces a new single that's rising on the charts. It's all ahead. The UN Security Council held an emergency meeting Wednesday to discuss a chemical weapons attack in Syria that has killed scores of people. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley implored the Council to approve a resolution blaming Syrian President Bashar al-Assad for the deadly attack.
When the United Nations consistently fails in its duty to act collectively, there are times in the life of states that we are compelled to take our own action.
I'm joined now by VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir. Margaret, is Ambassador Haley suggesting that the U.S. will take independent action in regards to Syria?
Well, that's certainly how some people here are interpreting it, but she was thin on details, so I would caution against anyone getting too carried away with it.
Yeah, what has been the reaction at the UN? I know it's she just made this statement fairly recently, but to her comments.
I think people want to know what the White House's Syria policy is going to be. In fact, just before the meeting, the French ambassador said that we really need a strong position from the United States on Syria. If not now, when? So. Nations, our allies, are waiting to see where the United States is going to come down on the Syrian issue, especially since there have been some mixed messages in the past few days about whether Assad should stay or go, whether he's a priority for the United States or not a priority, whether only countering terrorism is a priority.
Yeah. Is there a perceived gap between the U.S. and its European allies in regards to how to proceed on Syria?
Well, I think that we're still waiting to see if there's a gap because nobody really knows the U.S. position quite yet. So once that's clearly stated, then we'll know whether there's a gap. But the Europeans have always been, very consistent on their position on Syria. And right now there's this donors conference in Brussels for rebuilding Syria. And a couple weeks ago, the French ambassador was speaking about this conference to a group of reporters, and he said, there won't be a penny for Syrian reconstruction from us if Assad's still there. So, the Europeans have been consistent till now, anyway, in their position that he should go. But whether we're going to start seeing some wavering in that, maybe from the British or others, remains to be seen.
Well, Russia has condemned this resolution and defended the Syrian government. It has accused Syrian rebels of responsibility. Clearly, Russia is still very much backing Assad.
Yeah, this was really very much, honestly, with the Russian speeches, it's sort of very repetitive. It's the same line every time. It's their very typical practice. They, blame everyone else. They try and distract and bring up other things. Today, the Russian envoy was criticizing the civil defense forces, the White Helmets, saying they've been discredited and all this. And the White Helmets are, very brave heroes by all accounts in the Syrian conflict, and he was criticizing them and saying, don't believe their videos of these victims. So that was really actually quite shocking. But he, he seemed to support an investigation, but the typical practice for the Russians in the chemical weapons issue has been to call for investigations, and then when the investigation results come back, they refute the conclusion, saying they're not impartial or they're politically motivated. So I would expect that's probably what they're doing this time, too. Yes, go ahead and investigate, but, in a few months when you come back and tell us that the government did it, we're going to tell you it's an impartial. It wasn't, it was a biased investigation.
All right, thanks a lot, Margaret. That's Margaret Bashir, VOA's UN correspondent. Dr. Manzur Yaji is president of the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations USA. It's an organization that provides medical assistance to Syrians. I asked him about the scale of Wednesday's attack in Idlib, Syria.
This is, you know, according to all our data from the past today, it's the largest scale, actually. We know this is, we had in the past, you remember, the Ghouta and Damascus area and several other areas around Syria. But this time, you know, the magnitude of the injured and the dead is really higher than any other attack in the past. That's why all of us in shock, you know. So this is over, and it's not going to happen again. And suddenly, we wake up yesterday in this news. We don't have 100%, you know, real count. We're still communicating with our doctors inside Syria. We have from Idlib's province, we have Dr. Khalid. He's the head of the medical office there in the Idlib. And they're still counting the bodies and how many people we have. It's about 100 people dead according to the data so far. And there's more than 500 injured affected by them. And the number is still going up. Because, you know, sometimes after a few days, people, you know, died or lose their life with this kind of chemical attacks.
Well, apparently the World Health Organization is saying that the victims appear to show symptoms consistent with exposure to a nerve agent.
I mean, that's, we're trying to confirm that. We're trying to be very specific ourselves since we are experts in the medical field. And we train our team inside Syria to really, before we say anything to any media, to make sure we confirm it. We are in our, you know, we are doing that currently. And yes, because of the, you know, the one fourth of the people exposed died exposure. And usually it could be the organic phosphor or serine, but we don't have it confirmed yet. I mean, this is our initial guessing that this is, it could be the one that's been used yesterday.
When something like this happens, I mean, how can your organization try to help civilians in Syria, you know, withstand what they could be faced with?
That's really the first, you know, the most horrible thing. That we were in Geneva first. We started because we had a meeting in Geneva almost 10 days ago, and we were trying to reorganize. We have our board meeting from several countries. We are, you know, we spread on Europe and United States, Canada and Syria and Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon, Gulf. And we have all our members meeting to look into the current and the future in the planning. And we have some plan, and we are frustrated because all the world right now, they're cutting down on the medical aid to Syria. And we have, you know, like a crisis currently without any attacks. We are not meeting the demand of the Syrian people, what we've been doing the last few years. And that's why we have, you know, a lot of pressure on us how to manage. And then we lost a lot of our faculty inside. We attacked. We have direct attacks almost on a daily basis to our hospital. Actually, we were in Geneva last Sunday, and we were just attacked. They attacked while we were meeting there, the Frembel Hospital. They put it out of work. And then in the last week, just 3-4 hospitals been attacked. And that's why we are talking about our team inside Syria being attacked directly and systematically. And then we come, you know, again, and we have this disaster, and our team has to respond. That's why it's a very, very frustrating, you know, and it's very hard for us to be able to meet this demand.
That's Dr. Manzur Yaji. He's president of the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations USA. He was speaking to me from Texas. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
So, two stories trending that we might think of as kind of insider DC stories. And as we were talking about just before we went on air, social media has really nationalized these stories. They're things that would have only been talked about in small circles, maybe in DC. And now, thanks to social media, everyone is talking about them. So the first is Stephen Bannon, President Trump's, one of his top advisors, being removed from the National Security Council. Now, when he was appointed to the National Security Council, that made big headlines. He did not have national security experience. People were questioning that move. Well, now he's been removed. Unclear exactly why. A lot of discussion about that, about why this move is happening, the timing of this move. People saying that he never should have been on the council in the first place, and that this may signal signs of trouble in the Trump administration. others coming to the defense saying it's merely a reorganization. He didn't get fired from his position in the Trump administration. They're just moving people in and out. So people trying to spin that, as we often see on social media from both sides, the spin game.
Yeah, well, he has been controversial, but he's also seen as very powerful.
Exactly. So that's why a lot of these questions are swirling about this move. If he had done something wrong to upset the president, or if it's just merely a reorganization, as some people say. The other big story trending, this DC story, hashtag hold the floor. Now, this hashtag's being used around Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon. He held an all-night filibuster on the Senate floor against Judge Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the Supreme Court. He was on the floor for about 16 hours all through the night, and people, rather than tuning into TV to see him, could just go to their computers or phones and look on social media. His speech was live-streamed for the duration on social media. And he actually tweeted out after he was done. He said, thank you for the support I had on the floor. I won't stop fighting for democracy. However, the flip side of that is accusations that this is just a stunt. Many people pointing out that this filibuster won't actually keep the vote from happening, but still others saying what a great effort that he's made. So again, the back and forth politically, but no doubt about it, it takes a lot of physical strength, certainly, to stand for 16 hours on the floor of the Senate.
Absolutely. A lot's going on here in the corridors of power.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Donald Trump, as we just heard, removes his chief political strategist, Steve Bannon, from the National Security Council. Germany threatens social media companies with massive hate speech fines. The Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will meet with his Russian counterpart following a G7 meeting in Italy next week. And Afghanistan reacts angrily to Pakistan's fencing of its border. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's New Horizons spacecraft provided scientists an amazing once-in-a-lifetime look at the dwarf planet Pluto as it flew by it in July 2015. Along with spectacular images of Pluto, the spacecraft also sent back those of Pluto's five moons, including high-definition shots of Charon, its largest, and Nix, one of its smaller satellites. After the flyby, New Horizons has continued on a path to its next flyby destination, a Kuiper Belt object called 2014 MU69. Officials with the New Horizons mission report that the spacecraft has recently reached its important halfway point between Pluto and MU69 and would be put into a 157-day hibernation period. The New Horizons spacecraft is expected to fly by 2014 MU69 sometime in January 2019. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear disc jockey Calvin Harris's new single, Slide. Just a day before a scheduled U.S.-China summit in Florida, North Korea launched what U.S. Pacific Command called a KN-15 medium-range ballistic missile into waters off the North Korean coast. Troy Stangerone of the Korea Economic Institute tells International Edition's Victor Beatty external events appear to be giving the North Korea impetus to advance its ambitions aggressively.
They are clearly trying to take and perfect their technology as quickly as they can. We're seeing right now tests that run roughly once a month, if not on a quicker pace. There have been discussions in regards to whether the U.S. is engaging in cyber attacks, and that might explain why we're seeing some of the failures. I think North Korea is determined to perfect this technology before they can be stopped.
The White House is ratcheting up the urgency over the North's nuclear pursuit ahead of the U.S.-China summit, with a senior U.S. official warning the clock has now run out on Pyongyang. A very terse statement from Secretary of State Tillerson late Tuesday. North Korea launched yet another intermediate-range ballistic missile. The United States has spoken enough about North Korea. We have no further comment.
Right now, it is not the time to necessarily be drawing lines in the sand, I think. Any steps that the United States could take short of military action will likely require time. Saying that we have no comment or that the clock has run out doesn't really mean much, and I think empty rhetoric doesn't really help us to solve the problem. What we need to do is, at the upcoming summit meeting with China, stress to President Xi that this is something that we need to resolve, that the time is running out. But that's more of a private conversation than a public one.
On Tuesday, before the Senate Armed Services Committee, General John Hyten, head of the U.S. Strategic Command, said that any effort to curb the North's weapons program will need to involve China. President Trump, to the Financial Times Sunday, indicated that if China doesn't help, the U.S. is prepared to go it alone.
I think that the comments by President Trump reflect more the U.S. desire to take and resolve the problem, and that it will take action which China may not approve of if they do not cooperate. General Hyten is correct. Any solution to this problem requires not just China, but to be honest, South Korea, Japan, Russia, and the United States all to be on the same page. If we're not doing things to take and bring all the parties together, we are simply allowing North Korea the room it needs to maneuver between the different parties and exploit differences between the parties.
China says it has very little leverage on North Korea. Can China do more?
China provides North Korea with oil each month. China continues to do, which is admittedly still legal business with North Korea. You have roughly up to 40,000 North Korean laborers in China. So there are different areas where China could continue to apply pressure. The difficulty for China is balancing both the need to apply pressure to push Pyongyang back to the table, but also to not apply so much pressure so quickly that either the regime itself collapses through miscalculation on China's part, or that North Korea responds in a kinetic manner, feeling that perhaps the clock is running out.
That's Troy Stangarone of the Korea Economic Institute. In a briefing Tuesday, a senior U.S. administration official said the United States hopes this week's summit with China will produce an understanding to coordinate on North Korea, and that Beijing will exert what the official called its considerable economic leverage to bring about a peaceful resolution. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. A disc jockey who produced one of last year's biggest hits with singer Rihanna is back with a new release. VOA Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with all the details.
Now, Calvin Harris is one of the most respected electronic dance music producer DJs in the game. He's from Scotland. Everybody remembers last year's big famous publicized romance with Taylor Swift that lasted for about 10 months before it came to an end. Calvin has quite an illustrious collection of hits that he's been involved with over the years. In fact, he's got 9 top 10 UK chart songs, which is even more than Michael Jackson in the UK. And most recently, he's decided he's not going to do albums anymore. The last album he put out was a CD called Motion in 2014. And he made the announcement earlier this year. His plan for 2017 will be 10 singles with what he called some of the biggest names in music. And he's staying true to that promise because his brand new single, the song we're going to listen to today, features one of the hottest R&B performers, Frank Ocean. So let's check out Calvin Harris and Frank Ocean, and this song is called Slide.
Do you slide on all your nights like this? Do you try on all your nights like this?
I might.
Put some spotlight on the slide.
Well, now, Larry, Calvin Harris had a huge hit last year with Rihanna.
Yes, This Is What You Came For was a song that was actually written by Taylor Swift, and there was a little bit of controversy because she had played it for him, probably in the hopes that she was going to be the one to record it with him, but then their relationship ended, and shortly thereafter, here it comes with Rihanna. And it became a big number one song for both of them. And Calvin, whose real name is Adam Wiles, is from Scotland. He last year was the top money-making DJ in the game, with an income of over $70 million last year.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. And he continuously tops the DJ, you know, magazine lists of the most popular DJs on the planet. He's one of the most desired producers in the business. He's recorded several songs, three of them, in fact, with Ellie Goulding. And he's worked with quite a few other performers as well. In fact, he has a brand new song that's just about to come out. It'll be number two of the 10 he's promised this year. And it features Ariana Grande, and it's called Heatstroke. So that will be his next single. But right now, the new one, which is Slide, featuring Frank Ocean, is on the rise on the charts. And Calvin Harris still remains one of the most popular DJs in the business.
Yeah, and I think Rihanna did a pretty good job on that song last year.
Yes, she did. And all the songs he put out over the years have done well. Now, Calvin doesn't like to sing. He's really kind of a behind-the-scenes creator. But he has sung on a couple of his songs as well, but he prefers not to be the guy singing.
All right, thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Do you slide on all your nice like this? Do you try on all your nice like this?
I might.
Put some spotlight on the side.
And that's the song Slide. And that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States recently honored 13 exceptional women from around the globe for their perseverance and leadership in helping promote justice in their communities. First Lady Melania Trump presented the Women of Courage Awards. Their lives remind us of the boundless capacity of the human spirit when guided by moral clarity and desire to do good, she said.
These are the stories of human greatness that will continue to inspire and therefore must be told far and wide. These honorees who have fought on the front lines against injustice are true heroes. Their stories of individual bravery remind us that there is always hope whenever the human spirit is brought to bear in the service of others, and that healing and personal empowerment are often born from such deeds.
Three of the 13 awardees were from the Africa region. Arrested at the age of 22 for peacefully calling for credible elections in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Rebecca Kabugo became one of the youngest female prisoners of conscience in the world. Upon her release in 2016, she emerged as a voice demanding democratic reform and social change. Malebongo Malefi was a national basketball player for Botswana when she became crippled after being shot 8 times by an ex-boyfriend. Now wheelchair-bound, she has become a tireless advocate for victims of abuse in her country. United Nations peacekeeper Major Aichatou Issaka Ousmane of Niger works on the front lines of conflict and peacebuilding, helping survivors of terror and bringing social services to those affected by violence from groups such as Boko Haram. These women are truly leading the charge to fight for those that cannot fight for themselves, said Ms. Trump.
Together, we must declare that the era of allowing their brutality against women and children is over, while affirming that the time for empowering women around the world is now.
The U.S. congratulates these women of courage from Africa and their fellow awardees from around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.